This is the ethics session and panel. The purpose of this panel is to highlight the role of ethics in big data research. The session is going to open with an overview of ethics issues by Mike Kalishman, who will be joining us by phone. Mike is the director of the Research Ethics Program. And after Mike gives a kind of overview of this area, then I'm going to follow with a brief discussion of a particular example of research use of big data, and that's electronic health records, probably one of the most obvious places where ethical issues arise, although one of the things that we're interested in is the way in which these ethical issues arise in other areas as well. Okay, and with that, I'm going to see if we can get Mike by phone. Hello, Mike.
Okay, so the first question is, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead then. Thanks, Mary.
All right.
And by the way, since you did introduce yourself, that's Mary Devereaux, Assistant Director for the Research Ethics Program and a bioethicist. So I just have a couple of slides, and I'm going to be very brief. The charge to me is to sort of introduce the framework that we have for ethics. And I will begin by noting that in case any of you are wondering if I must be some kind of celebrity that I'm calling in, that is unfortunately not the case. I just have a medical issue that's keeping me from getting out very much these days. So I have to call in, which means I have the disadvantage of not being able to see you, but you get to hear me. So first, if we could fast to the first slide, Mary. I want to begin by thinking about what ethics is. So this would be number one. And when we talk about ethics, what I have noticed repeatedly over the years in the field of research ethics is that almost everybody knows what ethics means, but they all have different definitions from one another. So I want to be clear about what we're thinking about today. So we can advance to slide two. We're not just worrying about breaking laws, which you could argue that's unethical to break laws. Yes, that's true. But we're not just worried about that. And we're also definitely not just worried about human subjects, what happens to people in research or animal subjects, which are certainly ethical issues. But we're worried about something more than that. So if you advance to slide three, we're more generally trying to answer the question, how should we act in research? And that question comes up more often than most researchers might think. Most of us, and my background is in research as well, most of us tend to focus very much on the work we're doing and not necessarily thinking about where there might be ethical challenges, questions of what choice should we make here? So if we can advance to slide four, I'm going to make the case that all or nearly all of the big data projects that you've heard about today and that many of you are engaged in are likely to face ethical challenges even if they haven't already. That's slide five.
We're having trouble with the slides here. Okay, sorry. We're at five. Okay.
Okay, good. Thanks, Mary. So in terms of goals, what are the goals of trying to do this? Well, the first goal is that we want to simply put ethics on the table, and I hope we'll convince you of that in the brief presentation I'm making and the presentation following from Mary. But second, what we're hoping to do is help start the dialogue and the conversation so that all of you and all of us can identify and address the ethical challenges that go with our work. Advance to next slide, six, which is why. So why are we worried about those goals? Well, part of it is it's just the right thing to do. I mean, when we talk about ethics, we all want to be ethical. We want to do the right thing. But even more practically, the goal here is an important scientific goal. We want to mitigate issues. We want to deal with issues that could otherwise derail important work. There are many landmines in almost every kind of major project, and big data almost by definition is a major, in every case, it's going to be a major project where there are pitfalls that if a mistake is made, the work could actually be set back rather than move forward. So we want to think about what those might be. So advance to the next slide, seven. Mm-hmm. So any big data project, like any research project, could be viewed as having at least six parts to it. And this is just one framework of thinking about this. There's planning of what you're going to do, the actual conduct of the research, how data are selected that will be used for subsequent analyses, how the data analyses will be conducted, how those data analyses will then be interpreted, and finally reported. If we go to slide 8, I would make the case that each of these six areas has important ethical questions embedded in it. Those questions have to do with the choices we have that are in front of us. It isn't all just about the science. There are choices we can make that sometimes stand outside of the science. And who gets to make those decisions? Well, to a large extent, those decisions are relegated only to the scientists themselves, and we're going to make the case that we need to be aware of the other stakeholders and bring them into the conversation. Right from the beginning, planning a project, who are the stakeholders for the particular work that you're doing? To what extent have you done things that bring them into the loop? They've been invited to contribute to the planning of how the work will be conducted. As an example of where the public and the stakeholders might be interested, what if your project involves video surveillance and facial recognition software? What is the acceptable trade-off between privacy and security? Who gets to make that decision? It's not simply a matter of doing the research. It's a matter of bringing the public on board early on to design that research, to plan it as well as possible. In terms of the conduct of research, how will data be collected? Almost every project, not just projects that collect data from individual human subjects, but projects that collect data from large databases of various kinds, almost every one involves the question of some level of ownership on the other side. Who owns those data? Who has a right to make a decision about how they will be used? Have they been informed appropriately of what might happen when those data become part of this larger project? So this isn't just individuals, but also organizations or special interest groups. Third, in terms of data selection, what criteria do we use to describe what does not and does not count as data? How do we decide what are going to be included in this? And depending on what we choose, it could change the direction of the project. Again, who are the stakeholders? Who might want to have a role in thinking about how that might be handled? Data analysis. Once the data have been selected, what methods will be used? I have enough background in statistics to know that one can have a field day selecting amongst many different kinds of statistical methods to get the answer you want. So the question is, how do you appropriately choose the methods in order to decide what you're going, in order to find what you're going to get out of the research? Because those methods can dictate or delimit what you actually find. Next, interpretation of what you find. Who decides what the results mean and how to frame them? And finally, in terms of reporting what you found, when and where will results be reported? One big data project that I heard about, I would argue is a big data project, is something that was going on at Scripps Institution of Oceanography many years ago, in which they were collecting water quality information in a study that was going to be extended over multiple years. One of the researchers was proposing something that sounds very good and very ethical, which was, why not make this data available to everybody on an ongoing basis? But then they realized that there is a potential pitfall in doing that. And that is that if early on, before all the data has been collected, before all the analyses have been conducted, it's possible for somebody to do a secondary analysis on that data and draw a conclusion at an early stage that, in fact, those data are showing that the water quality is just fine. Therefore, perhaps we are over-regulating the industry that is dumping pollutants into the water. Or might conclude, conversely, that the water quality is terrible, and therefore we need to further regulate the industry. Major decisions might be made based on an inappropriate use of the data because a decision had been made to release it earlier. So even the questions as to when and where data should be reported leaves more questions of the conduct of science. So we can move to slide 9, Mary, the last slide. So assuming you agree with my very brief introduction here and what you'll hear from Mary as well, that good research in the area of big data will also require attention to meet ethical challenges. The research ethics program at UCSD has some experience dealing with identifying appropriate questions and seeking answers. We've used a number of different kinds of methods. We have some experience with surveys, interviews, focus groups, public forums, and we're happy to either help directly or help refer people to other places where they might look. And on the slide, you have my name and Mary's, and I'm going to stop there.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Okay. So given that introduction, I'm going to follow by just a brief overview of the use of patient records in research, and I'm very happy that I followed David Chang because this is an area that I think is very familiar to many of us because of our own healthcare. We've all had the experience now of going to the physician, and the physician no longer looks at us. He or she sits at a computer and types in various things, and we hope that they get it accurately. So what I'm going to do is to start by using this as an example, although, as Mike said, there are many other kinds of examples using big data for research. This is just one of them that raises some of the issues. And medical data, I think, because of its sensitive nature and privacy concerns, obviously is one area where ethical concerns are fairly obvious. And as Mike pointed out, though, almost any big data project is going to raise these kinds of issues. So I want to start by just talking a little bit about the value of aggregated data, the growing availability of electronic medical records, and these large databases like Epic of health information afford researchers a range of opportunities to understand disease patterns, to look at things like surgical outcomes, and to do better in terms of both efficiency, cost, and actual appropriate medical outcomes. So we can expand basic knowledge, we can improve patient care, we can increase the safety and efficacy of the system, we can lower costs. And the other thing, of course, is that we may be able better to document various kinds of inequities in care and reimbursement. So, as I said, there are lots of research opportunities here. Computerized searches of these very large data sets allow us to do a whole range of things. However, there are going to be ethical, regulatory, and legal challenges. So I thought I would start by just a quick overview of what some of those are. One is what I really think of as more of an IT question than an ethics question, but that is, what does de-identification mean? Oftentimes, people are very, very concerned about privacy and confidentiality, particularly in the medical field, because of the connection between patient information that may be quite sensitive, genetic information, HIV or STD incidents, immigration status, and so on. All of these things are in the records. So we talk a lot about anonymizing or de-identifying these records. And one question is, from a logistical or technical point of view, what does that mean and how secure is de-identification? How well can it be done and with what assurance? Another question is whether patients actually own their medical information, whether they have the right to refuse to consent for its use, or whether, in fact, we should use a different kind of model and think of patient information, particularly in these de-identified big aggregate data sets, as something that's really a social resource and that there's an ethical obligation for all of us to share that information, not just in terms of its benefit for ourselves and our families, but as a social resource. Another question is, what form of consent works best from a research perspective? We talk about broad consent, specific consent, dynamic consent, blanket consent. We can talk more about that perhaps in the question. Period. And then, what are the responsibilities of biomedical researchers, or in fact any kind of researchers, when they are using large data sets? In this case, it's health information, but in other cases, it might be political affiliation or other sensitive information. So the question I wanted to focus on in the next couple minutes is just, do patients own their own medical records or their information? I wanted to start with a distinction that I think is really important in this area, and that is a distinction between original use, which is for patient care, the clinicians are gathering this information to actually make us better or to prevent various kinds of diseases, and so they collect things like our family history, record of procedures, and so on. That's the original use for collecting this information in electronic health records. And of course, the whole promise of the electronic system as opposed to the paper system is better access, better research, better outcomes data, and so on. Now, the secondary use is what most of us are here for, and that is defined as non-direct care of personal health information, where the original use was for healthcare for the individual patient's good. In this case, we're talking about, as Mike sort of showed us in terms of the whole process, the analysis, the collecting, the analysis, the interpretation, and the sort of publication of that that data. It can be used for all kinds of things, accrediting medical professionals and so on, as well as commercial uses. Now, there is a question about whether patients own their data. There was just in September an updated HIPAA authorization that basically says HIPAA was originally designed for patient confidentiality, but in the research context, the idea now is that patients should have the right to opt in to use their, to give permission for their information to be used in research. The American Medical Informatics Association has identified a number of issues that I want to just sort of quickly run over. Public awareness and trust, ownership and access issues, and sort of control, that is, who owns this and who has what kind of control. A couple of recommendations that they make is, first, the emphasis on transparency in policies and sort of what we're doing. As the technology improves, as the process for mining this information becomes clearer and so on, people need to understand what is being done, how their information is being identified or re-identified, and who, as Mike mentioned, who are the stakeholders at the table and what role do they have in an ongoing discussion of sort of policy and how it is that we're going to use this data in secondary cases. So their bottom line is increased transparency. The consumers, studies show, we've done some empirical work on this, that patients and other contributors to various kinds of big data are willing to do this, but they want to be assured that the information is safe and they want to know what the research is and who is doing it. So two more recommendations of theirs are, again, given stakeholders, discussion and consensus building with those members of the public as well as researchers, increased public awareness with public education. That is, why do we want to mine these data sets? What can we do with them? The kinds of things that David was talking about in terms of improved outcomes, safety, efficiency, and so on. The research ethics piece of this, I want to just conclude that basically, as Mike said, there is a research ethics program here, and part of the aim of doing research education, research ethics education in this field as in general, is basically to raise awareness of what the ethical challenges are in gathering and accessing and processing this information in what I'm calling secondary use, understanding the risks and benefits, and then applying the principles of medical ethics to the informatics. So, for example, the fact that people do have a right to opt in or opt out, that that's sort of reflection of their autonomy. And, of course, we should be discussing how best to meet those challenges, and I hope we can do that in the question period. Sources that I'm drawing from, one of the things you may be aware of or find useful is this AMI white paper, and there are other resources that are available in this area. So with that, I'm going to stop and open it up for questions. I have some questions that I thought of, but before I prod you with the questions I think we might talk about, I'm going to just see where people's own thinking is on this issue. And just to remind us that I'll answer questions, but I may defer to Mike, who is still, I think, here in voice. Mike?
I'm still here.
Okay, good. All right, we're going to go ahead and open it up to questions then.
So, I had a question. In terms of this issue of the patient owning their data, there's so many special cases. I mean, to me, it seems more straightforward to say if your body generates the data, you own it, and then you have a variety of licensing techniques that you can use to your doctors, to the medical establishment, including the opt-in and all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that gathering any steam? Because, of course, there's a lot of places like the Medtronics does in your suit, in which Medtronics said you can't get the data from the heart, your own heart has generated, and they eventually lost that suit. So it's not that this isn't being litigated, but right. Do you have any thoughts on where that simple point of view might?
Well, one of the things is I do think that, you know, your point about you can't get data even on your own, I think we're changing in terms of where that's going. And part of it is with electronic health records, that now we can go into our own records and sort of see what is there. And I had lunch with a genetics counselor the other day, and one of the things she was telling me was, and I'd actually never thought about this, but the kinds of either intentional or unintentional errors that end up in health records, where for genetic testing and screening and then sort of medical treatment based on that genetic information, it's really important that the record be correct. I always worry that, you know, people are trying to talk and they're typing in at the same time. But what the genetics counselor said that they see more and more are places where, for example, this was her example, people are hesitant to say, for example, that they or a relative has had cervical cancer, because cervical cancer is often caused by sexually transmitted disease, HPV, and so on. And so instead of saying, my mother had or I have had cervical cancer, they will say it female troubles, or I had ovarian cancer. And if you're treating somebody who has a BRCA gene, whether it's cervical cancer or ovarian cancer is a key element of information that you need to know, because apparently in one case there's no connection, in the other case there is, and it would actually impact clinical treatment. So I think the transparency of our being able to access our own records is definitely an area where we're going, and I think that should help in terms of accuracy. But it's also going to raise another whole set of issues, which, you know, are issues about what you want in your personal record, and given that, at least for now and the foreseeable future as things are going, we're not going to have a single payer system. So what goes in the medical record, and I think this impacts the medical research field, people are really worried about the privacy and confidentiality of their information, and whether those concerns are warranted or not, their reluctance to release information for research purposes, I think, comes from this worry that what is their personal health information is going to impact not just their insurance for health, but long-term care insurance, life insurance, and so on. So, yes, I think we're moving in that direction. I don't know. Mike, did you want to weigh in
here? Yeah, I just want to jump in quickly, because I think there's another part to that question that should be addressed, and that's the question of where the courts are going to take us on personal mm-hmm. ownership of data that might be collected in various ways from our bodies. And I am not going to predict where the courts are going to go, but I will predict that if we as academics and we as human beings who are going to be subject to these decisions don't get involved in public conversations and ask these questions that are still unanswered, or at least not answered well enough, then we risk having decisions made that aren't based on the best science and the best approach and the best interests of all of us. And this is a long-standing story here in California. Many of you may be familiar with the Moore Clause, the story of the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks, and these are cases where we have questions about our ownership of what comes out of our bodies, and I think our society still has mixed feelings about how to deal with that, and certainly from a proprietary point of view, there will be a push to say that the person who discovers the information from you gets to keep it and it belongs to them. Mm-hmm. And from a personal perspective, maybe we want to be keeping it for ourselves. I'm not prepared to tell you either of those is the right answer. I think this needs more conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mike. Next question? Yes.
More of a comment than a question. It seems to me that two things. One is that big data...
I think you're being given a mic.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. So more of a comment than a question. It seems to me that two things are happening. One is big data may be an inflection point for your field of research mm-hmm. ethics. And the second is that that must be a moving target, because the technology that enables big data is evolving so rapidly. So could you talk a little bit about how technology and research ethics interface?
Okay, good question. The first thing that occurs to me are certain things where I think we want to have more empirical information. So I mentioned very quickly, because all of these presentations are very quick and you have to talk fast, one of the things that from a public point of view everybody's talking about is de-identification, right? Keeping things anonymous, the coding, the keys, you know, keeping things in a locked file cabinet in the PI's office, which doesn't seem all that reassuring to me. But for certain research purposes, we also need to re-identify data. And again, that would be one example where I think the technology, how secure things are, what we know about. So for example, I think one discussion that's in the literature is in connection with genetic information. A lot of people say, give me your age, your gender, and your zip code, and I can identify you from any kind of genetics database. Other people are saying, that's really exaggerated, and it's not, in fact, nearly the privacy concern that we think it is. So one question, in terms of the connection between the ethics and the technology, I think the ethical questions that we're dealing with really do change. They're very much a moving target, because certain things get better. Say if we had, you know, really secure methods, I'm not sure I even know what really secure here means, but certain issues would disappear. On the other hand, as we get more and more sophisticated with what it is we're able to do, other issues arise. And the example I think of that is in the stem cell field, where everybody was exercised about embryos. We got other methods, iPS cell methods, and people thought the ethics were going to disappear, but of course they haven't disappeared at all. We just have a new set of issues. So I think it's an excellent point that I always like to point out that I think the thinking about the ethical issues and even what ethical issues we're facing at any particular moment are changing just as the science is changing, particularly in cutting-edge fields like bioinformatics, stem cell research, and so on. As the technology changes, the ethical issues change. Yeah, David.
I think an interesting point to be made is we often confuse health versus clinical data. And what we really are talking about is really clinical data. And with all the technology that people are talking about today, there are other ways to collect health-related data that are not within the clinical realm.
Mm-hmm.
And those wouldn't have the kind of problem you're talking about. So the question is, should there be a dichotomy like that, where if the data was generated in a clinical setting, then yeah, it's a whole sorts of problem to get to it. But if it was generated outside of a clinical setting, then it's a lot easier to get to. That sort of artificial distinction doesn't seem to make sense.
Right. Excellent point. I'm really talking here about personal health information in the medical record. But you're right. There are, for example, I mean, big data sets with, you know, you can look at epidemiology, you can look at, you know, public health reporting and so on. And those do raise separate issues. Mike, did you want to comment?
No, I think that's a fair enough answer.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes, please. I was going to ask a question. In the present discussions, is there a distinction between the data, information, knowledge, and potentially wisdom as far as, you know, decision making? Eliot said the quest of man is to go from information to knowledge to wisdom, and those are qualitatively very different states. Has that been focused on as lines that can be drawn appropriate for ownership?
I would have to say no. In none of my experience has anybody mentioned Eliot or that distinction, but I think it's an important sort of point, right, which is I mean, when you're talking about wisdom here, I mean, in part what we're trying to develop are research policies that are informed and thoughtful. And but I think maybe when you mention wisdom, you know, there are certain important, what I would call, because of my training, philosophical issues, like about, someone mentioned earlier, ownership of the body, right? We're talking about biospecimens as well as data. I think this is a really exciting area. Because it raises so many of these really fundamental issues about the body and what we're doing in research and what sort of our aims and goals are. So I think we're out of time. Yes. Okay. So we are out of time, so I will thank everybody and thank Mike for joining us from afar. And I'll turn it over to the next presenter.
Thank you.